and this is Alicia Adams, Reel One. So if I could ask you, first of all, Alicia, to tell me about your family in Poland before the war and what sort of lifestyle you enjoyed.
Well, I was born on the border of Russia and Poland, which really was a crime, and now it belongs to crime, but at that time it was Poland. It was a very small oil mining town, surrounded by one of the most beautiful countries imaginable, because these were the mountain Carpaths, and lovely gold fields. And my father was an oil mining engineer, and he worked for Shell, which was, he really worked for a firm called Bakum Oil Company, which was a subsidiary of Shell. And we lived in a very big house, which was not ours, it belonged to the company. We had a carriage and two horses, and next door was another house, which was belonged to the same estate. We had the same very big garden. And in the house next door lived another gentleman, an Austrian gentleman, who also worked for Shell. And he had one daughter. He was married to a lady who was half Jewish from Sarajevo. And the girl was, his daughter was the same age as my brother. And they were always playing together and getting married together. She tells me that they were both when I was born, because they were told that children were found in the back of the doctor, that the doctor brings the children. And they went and looked into his bag, and there was no baby there. So they came into the room, and my mother showed it to them. And my mother said that I was found under the cabbage, something like that. Anyway, we all played beautifully together. We were roaming the fields and playing with the Ukrainian children. I particularly liked playing with the Ukrainian children because they had very little houses, but they had stoves, and in the stove they used to keep golomki. You know, this is a Ukrainian dish which is made from cabbage stuffed with meat, and then bacon is put in between, and it is kept the whole night in the oven. And when the oven was out, there was like a shelf on the top of the oven, and the grandmother was lying on the shelf because it was the warmest place. And the grandmother would tell us stories, and I just love those stories. And in the summer, my father would come home at about 4:30. And in the autumn, they used to dig potatoes, the peasants. So we would go and we would make fire, and they would burn the potatoes in the fire, and we would jump over the fire. It was really a very beautiful childhood, which I had at the time. But in 1933, there was a crash in America, the war crash, and my father lost the job. And then we went to about an hour further, that little place was called Borislav. We went to a small town called Drohobych, where my grandmother lived, and my aunts and uncles. And we stayed there for a year, because I had scarlet fever, and my father went to a Polish port, which was called Gdynia. And he started their business, import and export of fruit. We stayed there for 2 years. Gdynia was a very anti-Semitic place. I was the only child at school who was Jewish. What I forgot to tell you, that living in that house where we only had an Austrian family next to us, the Austrian family used to invite us for Christmas, and we would sing Christmas carols, and we used to invite them for our holidays, Pesach, and they would come and eat with us. So I thought that's how it was. I never had any ideas about Jews being different or anything. It was only when we came to Gdynia that the antisemitism, there were only 10 Jewish families there. And my mother sent me to a convent school. In the convent school, I had one very good friend. She was Jewish, but her father had a very big business with cars, and he had an affair with some woman, and the wife killed the little girl and committed suicide. So I lost my only friend. That was very unfortunate, but Gdynia was a very beautiful town. We couldn't ski like we could ski in Drohobycz, in Wrocław. We had mountains, but we went ice skating. But my father didn't like it at all. You see, he was an oil mining engineer, and it wasn't his job. The people who had the partnership with him, they emigrated to South America. And they asked my father to join them, but he didn't want to go. He went to a border of Germany, which was a town called Gorice, which also had oil, and he started his own business. That was year 1937. He started the business selling oil machinery and pipes to all the drilling, I don't know how to say it in England, in English. It's, we called it ships, you know, for drilling in those days. They were coming out of the earth. I don't know, rigs. Oh, yes, it's called
a rig, yes.
A rig, yes. To all the oil rigs. And he just started doing very well when the war broke out. That was 1939. He sent us to a holiday place in Krynica. And my mother heard on the radio the war broke out, and we had two suitcases with us. We went back to Gorlice, and my father put us immediately on a train going to my grandmother to Drohobycz. And with the two suitcases, we didn't take anything from the house. We had beautiful furniture. We had beautiful paintings by Bruno Schulz, who was my teacher later on in Drohobycz. He taught me drawing. But before the war, he was a friend of my parents, and my parents bought a lot of his work. As a matter of fact, I was always afraid, because in the dining room was a very big picture of his, and it was sort of skeleton-like figures were sort of crawling towards a beautiful lady on a podium. And it always frightened me when I had to sleep there. But we left everything, and on the way we were bombed. So our luggage disappeared, and we came to the grandmother with nothing. And we started living with the grandmother at that time. My grandfather was still alive. In 1939, the Russians came to Drohobycz. My father came back on foot with the Polish army, which was retreating. And he left everything. He had to leave his business, and he was very upset about it. But in Drohobycz, my grandfather died very soon. He was 73 and he had sugar diabetes. And my grandmother had a very small flat. She had a flat, two rooms, kitchen and bathroom. And we went to live with her. My father got a job. I can't remember where, but it must have been on one of the refineries. You know, in Drohobycz, there were three oil refineries. And we went to school. My brother went to the Polish gymnasium, and I very soon joined him. And we had quite enough food. We had, as a children, we had to join the Red, we had to become Red Pioneers, which meant that we had to wear a red collar, and we had to learn the Communist Constitution. If you knew the Communist Constitution by heart, you could get away with everything else. And I was always very good at art, so I was doing art for all my friends, and they were doing my math, so consequently I can't count. But I like very much the drawing teacher, who is now so very famous because he wrote two books, and he was a very good graphic artist, Bruno Schulz, and he was teaching all of us at the time, but he couldn't keep discipline very, very much, and we were really running over his, we were very, very naughty children in those days. Mm. But the Russians were very good to children. You see, they gave to children everything. We had a house of a Red Pioneer where you could learn anything, from ballet dancer to embroidery, anything was given to the children. They took it back afterwards, because if you became somebody afterwards, they could send you to Siberia, for instance, to work there, yes? But when it came to children, in those days, you could really, you could learn anything you wanted. They were wonderful to children. So it was perfectly all right, you know. I didn't suffer. Maybe my parents did, because maybe my father didn't have much money, and we lived in those two rooms with my grandmother. It couldn't have been easy, but it was all right.
Did people, were people taken at this time, though, by the Russians, well, eastwards?
The people who came from the east, from the other side of Poland, were told to register. And my father thought he was very clever, so he went to register in Lvov, which was the neighboring very big town. So consequently, when they took people to Siberia, they looked for us in Lvov. They didn't look for us in Lvov. That was our very bad luck, because we could have survived. Everybody else who was taken has survived. And we stayed in Drohobych.
So it's ironic, had you been taken to Siberia,
absolutely,
you would have
survived. Yes, sure. All our friends and relatives who were taken to Siberia, they all survived. They survived in very bad circumstances in Siberia, but my friend is a doctor, the other friend is a doctor, they managed somehow very well in spite of living on Siberia. But we had Germans came in 1941. We were still very lucky in that respect that they didn't come to our part of Poland in 1939.
In 1941, though, when the Germans came in, would this have been the time when Russia was invaded by Germany?
Well, part of Russia, yes. Yes,
the Ukraine. Mm.
The Ukraine, yes, must have been already invaded. You see, on these parts, I am not sure. You see, Rabbi Paul Levy, I'm sure he knows everything about it. I'm not sure.
Yes.
No, it's how far really the Germans went.
Yes, it's really, and please don't worry about that, because we are just interested. You were a young child,
yes,
in what you experienced and what you knew. So that other is history which people can look up. But I just wondered if you were aware at all of war events and the relationship between Russia and Germany.
No, I was too much of a child. And I worried, for instance, I had to learn Russian, Because having lived in the other side of Poland, I didn't have to learn Ukrainian. While in Drohobycz, in that part of Poland, which was Ukraine, you had to learn Ukrainian and Polish. So they were learning two languages already for 7 years, and I came in and I didn't know a word. So I had to catch that up. So I was rather worried about things like that, what was going on in school, etc. But in 1939, I was with a friend on the street, and the Germans walked in. And that was the most frightening experience. They came, you know, on the motorbikes, like you see in a film, with the helmets. And I remember watching them and then running home quickly. And immediately they didn't take any possession of the town. They let the Ukrainians roam absolutely wild. They made the first pogrom in Drohobycz. We had to hide while the Ukrainians came in and they took whatever they could and they were killing people. And it's only after about 3 or 4 days that the Germans took the position of the town.
Was that a great surprise? You were saying earlier the good relationship you had with Ukrainians.
Yes, because then at that time I lived in the country, I lived near them, and I played with their children. I never really realized how terribly anti-Semitic they were. And these Ukrainians were not really country, they were not farmers, they were Ukrainians who lived in town, they were from Drohobycz. And yes, they created that pogrom, and also they hated the Russians. They smashed the figures of Lenin and Stalin, which were in the middle of the town. And
that pogrom, did you experience anything yourself? Did you see or hear anything
of
it?
We were hiding in the loft, my whole family at the time, and we heard them downstairs. They were, you know, they knocked the door, they came in, and they were taking whatever they could. And they murdered quite a few people in those days, you know. I personally, I have not seen them, I only heard them, and we were hiding. But of course the next day when we got out, we heard that they killed quite a lot of people, and they smashed the statue of Stalin in the middle of the town. And then the Germans took over and made everybody wear the Star of David, and took the important people like doctors and my father and a lot of men who were professional men. They made them clean the streets, and that was really done to show that, you know, the Jewish people were no good or something, I don't know. And I remember that was the first time when we really became very frightened. That was something I have never really forgotten, seeing my father and my doctor and other fathers of my friends cleaning the streets with the Germans standing over them. And they created the Jewish Judenrat, where everybody could get a quarter of a bread as a ration. That was the beginning of the hunger as well. We were told we had to leave where we lived, and we had to move to a part of Drohobycz which was going to be made only for the Jews. And when we moved there, we had one room for the whole family, and we only had that quarter of the bread which my father got and my brother. And my brother had to go out to work, and I had to go out to work in order to earn some more food.
When you say your family were living in the room, was it your grandparents?
My grandfather already was
just dead, yes.
My grandmother and us. I also had my mother's sister. She was the first woman who was a woman counselor in Drohobycz. And she was started working in Udine. And she had a husband and a daughter. She's here in this photograph. That's her. That was her husband. And that is her daughter. Where is Amula? I can't see her daughter here. Oh, yes, that's her daughter.
The daughter in the middle. Oh, yes.
Yes, that's Amula.
And were you all living together in that room?
We were all living together, yes. And she became very ill, because in Judenrat in those days, people were starving. My father was very lucky, he had a piece of material for a suit, and he exchanged it with a peasant for a sack of potatoes. So my grandmother made us scrub the potatoes very clean, and we cut on the top of the potato,
the skin.
The skin, yes. Very, very thinly. And she cooked the potatoes for us. But from the skin, she would go outside and look for wild spinach. And she would cook a soup. And in those days, there were children coming. They were absolutely starved. They had big stomachs. And, you know, they were coming by the dozens to the door, and we were giving that soup to them. And my aunt, unfortunately, because she worked in Udenrat, and all these children, at that time, typhus started. And she got typhus. And she was the first one who died. And it was the first time and the only time that the Polish population and the Jewish population went to a funeral. Because she was very respected. She was, as I say, the first woman counselor of the town. And I remember coming back with my grandmother from the funeral. So she was the first one who died. And then my brother got a job making bricks, and I got a job on the Gestapo, which you can see in my catalog on that photograph. I was 13 at the time, and we had to carry bricks and cement to the second floor on the Gestapo. But if you had a pass from the Gestapo, you felt safe walking around. Otherwise, you know, you could always have been taken away and shot. At least that's what we believed that we were safe. It was unfortunately at that time when my brother was working at this brick factory that he was the first one to be taken away. They came to the brick factory and they took 20 young men and they sent them to Lvov, to Janov concentration camp. My father sold everything that he had, I mean, most of the things he had, and he bribed people. Jews were not allowed to go from one town to the next town, but he somehow managed to bribe, and he managed to go to Lvov. That was about a month later. My brother had such a good character that he wrote us a letter through someone who managed to escape from this camp. And my brother wrote us a letter that he met one of my cousins, my father's brother's son, was there already. And he said that he was helping him and that he had food and he had everything and my mother shouldn't worry. By the time my father got to Lvov, he was already dead. He couldn't find him at all. And from what I read about this camp, it was absolutely a terrible, the most terrible camp imaginable. I went there about 3 years ago. And it is still a prison, it's a Russian prison, and they're breeding dogs at the bottom. There wasn't even a sign that there was one of the worst concentration camps. But Alison tells me that they're going, now I think they're going to do something there. So, after my brother died, my mother deteriorated terribly. He was always her favorite son. And I worked on the Gestapo, which was very dangerous and very unpleasant because people were beaten and killed every day, and we were very, very hungry always. All we were getting only was a quarter of bread, and we were growing tomatoes, but we were not allowed to eat those tomatoes. Some of my friends who were stealing the tomatoes, they were shot. And I remember one in particular who was a cousin of mine, because they lived opposite us. And I remember her mother coming with a shoe. She was clutching that shoe to her breast. And the girl was shot in such a way that you couldn't even see her face, because they had such bullets that could explode the face completely, and that's how she was shot. So that was a very hard time. And then somehow, I can't remember why, I stopped working on the Gestapo.
Could you tell me about the work you were doing? Was it, you know, heavy building work?
It was very heavy building work, of course. We were carrying the cement and we were carrying bricks to the second floor. If you slipped and hurt your leg and you couldn't do it, you were shot. The Gestapo men were standing there with their guns all the time over us. And there was one Gestapo man in particular, his name was Ginter. I was most surprised to read in the biography of Bruno Schulz that he was the one who killed Ginter, actually. But who killed Bruno Schulz. But I remember I once sat down, I was very tired, and I sat down. And this Ginter, he used to have a ring, a very big ring, it was a silver ring with a skull on it, and it was, the skull was very sort of out. And he used to beat people with that ring. So he saw me sitting there and he said to me, "Oh," he said, "you are so lucky today. I am in a very good mood. Otherwise, you would have eyes like that." So it wasn't, you know, it was not a picnic working there. But I can't remember why I stopped working there. Maybe there was no more work there. I can't remember. I remember they formed there a small... Yes, they formed there a small camp, and they started employing only people who had some kind of a profession which could help them. Like gardeners or tailors or carpenters, mainly people like that.